cloud. Okay. So I would like to welcome Mary Ellen Gleason, who is the author of today's case. The case is focusing on a nonprofit issue, but Mary Ellen really comes from a broad background, which includes medical devices, telecom, healthcare. She built her commercial foundation for more than a decade at US West, rising from account manager to director of sales and service. She was the chief executive officer of a symphony orchestra with a $17 million budget and an $8 million debt. Mary Ellen negotiated full debt forgiveness. She secured a $25 million gift. She grew the annual fund 33% from $9 million to $12 million. And by the time she left the organization, it was debt-free with over $2 million in cash. Since 2013, Mary Ellen has been principal of Mary Ellen Gleason and Associates. Her clients have included the Pasadena Playhouse, the Mattel Children's Foundation, the University of Southern California, A Noise Within, and the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. Mary Ellen recently served as the chairman of the board of Sensate, a direct-to-consumer health wearable device that uses infrasonic devices to achieve calmness without medication. I've got a Sensate device, thanks to Mary Ellen. If anybody wants to know more about it, call me. Mary Ellen received her MBA from the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern and her BA from Harvard University. So, welcome, Mary Ellen.
Thank
We're
you.
not going to go around, and I'm going to ask the spokespeople to, what did you decide? Why did you decide it? And then we'll take it, Mary Ellen. We'll take it from there. The first group consists of Babs, Jay Lee, Juliet, and Marianne.
All right, so I'm gonna go first, Larry. I'm the spokesman, and thank you for all my team members. And at the end, if I miss something, please jump in. So we found the case, interesting, in that there was this condition that, I will give $20 million if my person will join the board. So we felt that, a board assessment should be done as the first step to really understand who's on the board for how long, how, what is everybody doing? What is the assessment of the board? And what are the skills that we really want? And what are the gaps that we have? Because we're running out of money. We're running out of $35 million in 9 months. So there's a reason for that. So we felt it's really important to do a board assessment first. We also felt that we would like to separate the $20 million from the board person. We felt that we should be talking to, I don't remember her name, the woman that gave the 20 million, and basically say, this is wonderful. We really appreciate it. I think you're bringing a really good board member to us, but we would like to put them through our assessment. Once we do the board assessment and we understand our skill gaps, we feel he's going to fit. We think that good, new blood is really, really important, and he's got all these things that are wonderful, but we want to make sure that his skills are really fitting our needs, and also look for other board members because refreshing our board is really, really important. So we wanted to go through that process, and sort of separate the two. Ultimately, we need the money. We felt that it's common to participate as a board member by giving money, but this was somebody else. In other words, she's already on the board. And there's another, she wants to bring another person. So we wanted to ascertain that, but in the right governance process, so everybody feels comfortable. So that was kind of our mission. Any comments from the team members?
Julia, you did a great job. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Julia. Room two is Brian, Craig, and Ingrid.
Hey, Larry, it's Brian. I'll take the lead for us. Similar to Group One's thinking, we had questions as we always do. It's never written in the case. Any other lifeline? And what we mean by that is there any other way of capturing the funds that we need, or is this a one in, or die? Didn't know the answer to that. We're assuming it's a charitable entity, so there's not really a reporting to the public 10Ks and all that other stuff. Didn't understand how many board seats there were today, and that goes a little bit to what Juliet was saying about board assessment, who's on, what's their skill set, what are our gaps. We wanted to look at that to see if there was an imbalance, meaning if there was only three board members and this new person would be number four, then all of a sudden they could block things, right? So there would be an issue there, but we didn't know that that existed or not. So we'd want to understand that. The other thing we didn't know the answer to is, why are we in the position we're in? Like, what's not working with the raise? Why don't we have the cash that we need? Which goes back to what I think Juliet was saying about board assessment. What are the skills? Why do we have this gap? That was kind of the foundation that then led to, at the end of the case, the very last sentence was, what should Sullivan do? So we took it from that perspective. How would we advise? First and foremost, we would take the money. We would do that, but we too would maybe try to separate and not link them. So maybe have this person join as an advisory first, give a span of time, 6 months or something, to figure out if they really are the right fit and how and why, et cetera, but kind of separating it. So we would avoid the perception of impropriety, even though in our heart of hearts, we didn't think there was. And we all felt like we missed something. So I'm anxious to hear what other groups are thinking. But we also said the dynamics in that board meeting, where he kind of was telling his war stories and, his passions, and it overtook. The board is there to conduct business, and we felt that Sullivan should either take the lead or have somebody, chief of staff, the CFO, really keep the board on task with the agenda, and potentially taking the board member or this gentleman aside and saying, "Hey, listen, love to talk about that. Maybe we can do it a cocktail hour, but we're here and we got to go through these items." And that hopefully would avoid all the oxygen being eaten up and not really focusing on the important things, because we are in the place we are for obvious reasons, and we need to work through that. We did think that there was value in the individual's ability. So let's separate the 20 million. Let's say there wasn't a check assigned. We felt, given the background, that this individual really could help us as an organization to do fundraising and to link things in other ways. So we felt, I know an assessment is a good way to do it, but just based upon what was shared in the case, that independent of the money, this individual was bringing a gravitas to us as an organization that we could benefit from, in addition to just the money. So those were our takeaways. And Ingrid or Craig, if I missed something, feel free to chime in.
I think you captured it very well, Brian.
Good. The next group is John Morgan, John Tober, Mary Ellen, and Sam.
Well, as you might imagine, the newbie got stuck with the feedback session. So here I am. So forgive me ahead of time.
The returning.
The returning newbie. First and foremost, it's really hard to go third because Juliet and her group and Brian and his group did a great job of capturing what we really landed on, which was the urgency and almost requirement to move forward with the acceptance of the capital infusion to the business. And secondly, that understanding the board construction, competencies, size of the board, these were all really important things that were not completely clear in the write-up. But we felt like the most important thing at this stage is to validate the competencies and qualifications of the new board member on his own. He should stand through an evaluation, a conversation, a consideration, not just from his passion and experience, but really as a board member, how will he contribute to the role? His experiences and his network and visibility, we agree, Brian, I think you captured it well. We agree that he will bring an incredible amount of gravitas. but it really has to be aligned with the vision of the board and the mission of the business. And so I think that was really critical, is that there was an important process to go through to make sure that him joining the board and having a voice and being part of the board was going to be first validated and then agreed upon by the existing board members. So I think we ended up in a very similar place with key components that Brian and Juliet's group both brought to the table. Did I miss anything? John Tober, John Morgan, and Mary Ellen was very kind. She just listened quietly mostly to us.
Yeah, you did a great
That
job.
was a great job, a great recant of what we discussed. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. And the last group is Barry, John, Sanjay, and Susan.
Okay, well, first of all, I want to, this has been very interesting, and also I'm looking forward to hearing what Mary Ellen is saying, because your background is really, really appropriate to this, and you've been in these situations. So I think that our group, we saw, I think we realize that we have to acknowledge that this isn't all by the book, and but that's the way the world is, and in a lot of ways this is reality, and that people do make power plays, and people have all sorts of conflicts from the officially defined role, whether it's the executive director, whether it's the board members, whether it's Jillian. Everybody has has their own agenda. Call it agency conflict, what in the field Larry and I came from. And that it's just so whatever we think, Jillian is doing a power play, and that happens, and people I would probably do the same thing if I but it would be more important. What we want to do is find out why the power play is happening, what's really, what are they doing with the $35 million budget every year? What are their programs? Are they happy with the executive director? We hardly even mention that. Where it's more like the executive director is trying to say what to say, but the executive director is probably thinking also about how does this affect my job? Yeah, not executive, CEO, excuse me. How does it affect Grace's job? So there's a lot of things going on here, and we'd really want to know what's the goal of the organization? What are its activities? Is there a critique implied? And let's get at those kind of issues. John sort of compared it to messy family companies. Told us some nightmares stories. So this, in a sense, this is like a very small family where people know what they want, and the board is just used as a way. Or is the board here more of perhaps feel that the most important beneficiary of the foundation is the board members, not necessarily financially, but it's a club for them. So we don't know these kind of things. We kind of sense that Jillian has scared a few people there. Hence, people are that session where they're trying to figure out, just sort of feeling each other out. Is he dangerous? Does he have crazy ideas? Is this going to affect us? So again, in terms of prescription, I think we came out with, let's start asking questions, not just questions about the board's strengths and weaknesses, but about what's the organization and are we doing well, or does this reflect some serious problem? And that's how sometimes in that clubby world, again, I'm not part of that, will be interested in Mary Ellen's thoughts on that, but in that clubby world is sometimes people do indirect things. For example, is Jillian maybe upset with the executive, upset with the CEO and their performance, but is doing a kind of two-step rather than being direct about it. Do other members of my group have things they would add?
Okay. Thank you very much, Barry. Let's turn to Mary Ellen. Would you please comment on the comments?
Well, I enjoyed the comments very much, and I'll mention what we did from a governance perspective. in real life because it is a true story. And I want to back up and offer the why for this situation. So in this case, it was a musical organization, and I've run a number of them, so it's not exactly clear which one, which is good. And I will say that this was a very well-known national celebrity who was also a composer. And that the why was really about the capital structure of the organization and why the necessity of an endowment and to safeguard the endowment, because there had been a reputational issue that really prevented donors from making large endowment gifts because they felt the operating board was using it as a checkbook and not doing their job, not doing their fundraising, not giving their personal gifts. And so the real why of adding this celebrity to the organization was to form a foundation board, a separate it's called a Type 2 support foundation, and so that would be a very safe container. And that so when it came up that the wealthiest donor said, "I'll do X and Y, but you have to name this person to the board, to the foundation board." I was open to it because they brought, I heard someone say gravitas, and that was exactly right. It brought a good housekeeping seal of approval, and the star power was something that the tarnished reputation of the organization really needed. I will say that there were a number of governance issues that were addressed. So just a few. We did require separate decision making, as many of the groups pointed out. We did have to recuse the large donor from the vote. We did have many disclosures that went into our IRS Form 990 around conflict of interest, so that we did have in the minutes of the board meeting upon the election about how independently the director was selected. We had to limit initial committee assignments, and we did actually have, my group wanted to have a conditional or probationary period, and we actually did that. We had we baked into the minutes that there would be a review of the director's performance within 1 year of joining the board. But what I wanted to tell you, the real problem here was that the board meetings themselves were a disaster, because it was so intimidating to have this very national TV personality in the room that most of the directors would like huddle in one part of the table and not say anything or whisper. And they were expecting the celebrity to share these stories. And he too was so uncomfortable because he was a fish out of water. What did he know really about governance or institutional success or a strategy? He didn't. And so it really impeded the board, the business of the board, which a couple of you brought up. But more than anything, what I learned from this, I'll share, is that I did create an advisory board, which I thought of as like a container. So I had an operating board, a foundation board, an advisory board, and the container would include the governor of the state, the mayor of the city, these high-profile people. Because my experience after that and other examples was that it just wasn't a good fit to have them actually in an operating capacity of any kind. It wasn't fair to them, it wasn't fair to us. So those are the big high points. I'd love to answer any questions you might have.
Me, Larry, I know you're on mute,
Yes,
but I
Sharon
got my
has
hand
her hand up.
Yep.
Thank you, Mary Ellen. My question is, how long did it last? Like, how
It
long did he participate on the advisory and make an impact? And then tell us a little bit about those dynamics once you were able to isolate into boxes.
turned out to be, it lasted a couple of years on the foundation board and then moving to the advisory board. And that was way more fun anyway, Sam, because all they did was meet once a year and I had free cocktails and they got to go rub shoulders with the performers. And it was really good. It was good. And I got what I needed, which was the star power names, and it didn't mess up the operations of the boards.
Susan, you have your hand raised?
Yes. Thanks so much, Mary Ellen, for bringing us this scenario. Question for you is, Did the star power help from financial, or were there fundamentally other financial issues? Like, just was it enough is the question. And did the was there a big donor as well that was dangling and pushing for this celebrity?
Yes, there was. And it really, in the end, turned out to just be a series of conditions. I'll do this if you do that, then I'll do this if you do this. And it never really came to fruition. So it was short-lived, I would say, the benefit, the star power, but no, we didn't actually get what we wanted.
Jay Lee.
Thanks, Larry, for organizing this. And Marianne, thank you for sharing your insights. Just curious, in terms of the conversation with the donor that wanted to make the donation and originally wanted to link the board appointment to that, what was his or her motivation? And how did you have that conversation to tell her that, look, we love your donation, your contribution. At the same time, we need to go through this other process and put him on the advisory board instead. How did it go? We'd love to get sharing some insight on that.
Well, as I'm recalling, ultimately the celebrity's travel schedule was such where they couldn't meet the minimum meeting requirements, so I got a hallway pass. So I was able to move them into this other kind of realm, so that was good. But it was the reason she was that this donor wanted to rub shoulders with this famous person. That was it. It was pretty simple. And it was also because of their relationships with a couple of billionaires. Okay, so there was a lot to this.
Wow, very interesting. Thank you.
Brian. So my question is, there was an underlying issue where we were in a position where we didn't have an endowment. We didn't raise the funds we needed to keep going. It was kind of like, always an ongoing challenge. How did we resolve that? Like, what did the board do to not be in this position in the future? Like, how did they establish the endowment? What additional things did they do to have scale and capability and ongoing, funding such they weren't put in a similar position in the future? Because I think that was probably the real underlying challenge as to why you had to accept the 20 million to begin with.
Yeah, Brian, you're right. I mean, a couple of factors are it. So it was performing arts, a huge decline in earned revenue. The revenue model was in the not-for-profit, in the performing arts, looks like approximately a third earned or tickets, a third annual fund, and then a third from your endowment corpus. And so if any one of those elements is not performing, then the actual operating entity suffers because most performing arts groups have very high fixed costs and there are labor contracts. For those of you who live in Boston, you're very familiar with this current controversy about the Boston Symphony, and that the saga that you've been following for these weeks resolved yesterday is almost identical in every city in the United States. So it's nothing common. The other thing I'll say too, since I'm in the for-profit and the nonprofit world, is that a turnaround, because that's really what I am, a turnaround CEO in the nonprofit. And it's not like there's a clear destination, like a valuation or an exit. And so really what happens with these kinds of organizations, they're improvement strategies. So I would say it's more like almost like tranches of experiences. It's not just one thing. So it's very complex. That's why it's so hard to get people to be on these boards, to hire people to be the CEO. No, no big surprise.
John Tober.
Mary Ellen, thank you for that case. It was great, and we enjoyed having you in our session. No, just a question. What was the makeup of the board like? Were they givers? Were they people that could go out and get funding, or were they just there? I mean, what was that makeup like?
Well, we had an annual process where they had to commit each year. They had to make a pledge at minimum of the minimum expected contribution each year. And for those of you who have been on big nonprofit boards, often, like if the board has 100 directors, they'll just multiply it by $50,000, right? So that's a big line item in the operating statement is board giving. And so There were some people that were there representing corporate gifts, which was problematic, that they weren't necessarily going to make the minimum contribution. And so we tried to downplay that because it eroded the performance of the true people making all of the commitments of the board. So, but I would say generally the people while I was in this situation, we evolved to have them all pretty much toeing the line.
Thank you.
Barry, you have your hand up.
Yes. What was the relationship and the performance of the CEO there? Or it sounds like you came in as CEO, so the prior CEO, what were they doing, and did it, were they failing at their job, or were these entirely exogenous things like you said, some sort of embarrassing incident or scandal?
No, so I would say that the CEO I succeeded was doing the very best they could. In fact, they had a $10 million endowment campaign. The another group I had where I came in a similar kind of financial turmoil, and these organizations literally have decades of financial bad news, right? So it's people come in, and I'll speak for myself and do what they can to improve the governance, to improve the capital structure, but there's a reason why it's so hard, right?
Any other questions for Mary Ellen? So, thank you. Obviously, this is a group that really got into this case. So,
Yes.
thank you very much for presenting it. And we look forward to seeing you all in September and at our next meeting. We will have an interesting case. But before we leave, I just wanted to say Sanjay has come out with a new book. Sanjay, would you tell us a little bit about your book and what it's about?
You're muted, Sanjay.
Sanjay, can you unmute yourself?
Yes, unmuted now. Great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Larry. Maryland, amazing case study. I'm on exactly one nonprofit board, and it resonates. And also some thoughts on what can be done better. The name of my book is The Why Not Advantage: How Small Probabilities Create Outsized Outcomes. And it came out, it was published July 14th, so not too long ago. And the main thesis of the book is how to take personal risks and not be dissuaded by population level probabilities. So if someone says, running a restaurant, there's less than 2% chance of success. Yes, if you look at a million restaurants, 2%, but it doesn't say about you or your background, your context. So the book tries to say, hey, listen, think about yourself, your context, and then make a judgment. Don't look at low probabilities and just, be dissuaded there. So it's about taking personal risks. And there are many stories, some mine, but many others that I know. So that's what the book is about.
We look forward to seeing you all in September. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of the summer. Bye-bye,
Thank you.
everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank
Thank
you,
you,
Larry.
Mary Ellen. It was a great
Thanks. Thank
case.
you.
Thank you.
Thank
Take care.
you.